Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on the show, Steve. It should be a good one.
Thanks for having me, Steven.
Double S, anytime, man.
Christopher Mandog Russo here. You are listening to Steven Strom on TalkNorth.com.
Always passionate, always fiery. You're listening to the Strom Sports Show. Take it away, Steven.
And a very good Friday to you. Happy Friday, everyone. Welcome into the Strom Sports Show, episode 149. TalkNorth.com. Steven Strom here. We got a good one for you today. Greg Wyshynski, ESPN NHL senior writer, will join us in just a few minutes here. We'll talk everything going on with the NHL playoffs. We'll also sprinkle in some wild offseason as well. So Greg will join us in just a few minutes here. Again, check out the site, TalkNorth.com. All of our shows are on there. We got some interesting stories today. You know, there's a couple of interesting stories. One of them tough to tackle. You got to be really careful about one of the stories. We'll start here with local Viking stuff, and that's Danielle Hunter. Now, the Vikings defensive end has not been taking part in voluntary work the last 2 weeks, and Mike Zimmer said on Wednesday that he doesn't know what Hunter's plans are for their upcoming mandatory minicamp. Now, these OTAs, it's not mandatory to be there. I think that coaches would like to see their players there, but it's not quote-unquote mandatory. Now, on Wednesday, Zimmer came out and he said, when he was asked about Hunter and his absence and what's next, this was his quote, "We'll just see when the mini camp shows up," close quote. So that's classic old school Zimmer. He's not trying to think about it. He's not trying to get too much into it. He's clearly, he's frustrated. Everyone's frustrated. Everyone knows how important Danielle Hunter is to this team. But we knew, and this starts back in 2018, when Hunter signed a five-year, $72 million contract after his first year as a starter, the Vikings invested in a guy that they had no idea was going to turn out like this. This is what sports is, though. Like, this is what sports is. The Twins did it with Kepler and Sano, and some of them have worked out, some of them have not. You sign someone after their first year based on what you think they're going to do. And this is what the Vikings did, and it ended up being a brilliant deal. If you look at it on paper, 5 years, $72 million, he's quickly outperformed that deal over 2018 and 2019. He was the youngest player to reach 50 sacks in NFL history. He also has 29 sacks over the 2018-2019 season, and we know last year he missed the season with a neck injury and is under contract through 2023. So because of this new age, because of this non-guaranteed contracts, this is what's going to continue to happen. And it starts with the NFL, and it starts with their contract situation. If you're going to continuously basically say, all right, you can sign a player to however much you want it, but if this player gets hurt, you can just cut him. Now, there's sometimes the cap hit and there's dead cap and all that stuff that comes along with it, but players want guaranteed money, especially in football. And that's the reason why it's not guaranteed, is because football is the most fickle sport of them all, with injuries and all these different types of things that can happen. This is where Hunter ranks in highest paid edge rushers. He is 17th, okay? Danielle Hunter is a top five defensive end. He was probably top three a year or two ago, but because he missed of injury, I'll give him top five. He's the 17th highest paid edge rusher. So he is ticked off. He feels like he's completely underpaid, which he is based on his performance. But what really ticks me off is the lack of guaranteed contracts in football is putting these owners and GMs and coaches in an impossible situation. It is a lose-lose situation. Because if Danielle Hunter has that year, his first year, and you think that he's going to be great moving forward, and you sign him to a pretty realistic deal, 5 years, $72 million, and then he outperforms, now these players are sitting here. We see it with Watson. We see it with Julio Jones. Like, these guys that are under contract, they just want to leave now. They just want to go. They want to move and shake. All right, I don't want to be here. I want more money. All this kind of jazz. And you can't, as a fan, say anything about it with football, because there's no guarantees in their contracts. Kirk Cousins was the only player, the first player, to have a fully guaranteed contract. How can I sit here as a dude that doesn't play football and say, oh, come on, Danielle Hunter, suck it up and play? I can't say that because I get where he's coming from. But on the other hand, I get where the head coach and GM is saying, well, if we sign you to 5 years, $72 million, and you stunk, what's going to happen? Well, we're just going to cut you. So the NFL is not making this easy on their GMs and their coaches and their front offices because you're just in a lose-lose. You want to invest in a player and he's great? Well, he's going to want to be paid more. You want to invest in a player and he stinks? Well, you're just, that's, there you go. What's your cap hit? So it's so frustrating. And it starts, this is where it starts, the chicken or the egg? No, it's the NFL. They need to make sure, and I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't know if they need to go through a union. I don't know if that, whatever it needs to be, they need to figure out a way where players are getting at least a little percentage of that guaranteed money. Because if it doesn't change, you're going to continuously see this type of situation pop up. The Danielle Hunters that get signed early, outperform, they want to be paid. He is not a 17th overall edge rusher, but he's being paid like the 17th edge rusher. And this is the situation that the NFL has on its hands, and it's going to continue as we see these players are fed up with it. The NFL looks at the NBA and the MLB and says, why can't we do that? And the reason is because they clearly have the highest risk of injury and the shortest careers. So it's going to be a very interesting situation that's going to progress here. There are mandatory minicamp coming up. There is mandatory minicamp coming up. What Danielle Hunter does, I would be surprised if he came. I really would be. I truly would be surprised. Because he has leverage here. The Vikings pass rush last year, good luck. Now they get Michael Pierce back. They've divvied up parts of the defense. But that defense, don't get it twisted. Danielle Hunter is the leader, the pioneer, the engine that makes that thing go. So we'll see what happens moving forward. This is a really important story that I really wanted to talk about today. And it's about Naomi Osaka, who is a fantastic tennis player, Grand Slam winner. And on Monday, she said that she is withdrawing from the French Open after refusing to speak to the media. Now, she made a statement and came out and said, everyone can get back to focusing on the tennis going on in Paris. She also added that she's going to take some time away from the court. Now, this has completely mushroomed into something much bigger. We talk about mental health. We talk about, it's so funny because you see the clear, the palpable divide between generation to generation. You have people from the age of 15 to like, I want to say 30, fully supporting the mental health side of this, fully supporting go get yourself right. And then you have the older crowd, the old school crowd that is simply saying, you're getting paid X amount. You're getting asked questions, you know, man up kind of thing. And it's completely unfair. It's such an interesting topic because we've never seen this before from this high of an athlete. Like, we've never seen someone come out and say, I literally am not going to play the sport that I love based on how I feel going into a press conference. Like, we talk about people that walk the walk, talk the talk. It would be another story if she said, I still want to play. I don't want to face the media, though. Well, that's a contract thing. Osaka is actually giving up the sport that she loves because of these mental health issues. And she has revealed she's been vulnerable. She has revealed that she has suffered long bouts of depression since winning her first Grand Slam title in 2018. Go look at this incident that happened in 2018 against Serena Williams. She wins this match, and the crowd is booing because of how the match ended with some referee stuff or whatever. There was a spout between Serena and the ref, and it got a little bit ugly. But Osaka is visibly upset. I think she started to cry here. Like, this is, we forget sometimes that this is a 23-year-old human being, right? So anyway, she's fined $15,000 for not talking to the media, which is in her contract, and it just exploded. Twitter exploded. You had Billie Jean King who said, quote, in our day without the press, nobody would have known who we are or what we thought. You have a lot of people weighing in on this. And I think here's what I just take a step back really quickly. And I just want you to think about this. Number one, this is a 23-year-old who not only, I mean, when you talk about stepping into the limelight, when you talk about being thrown into the spotlight, not only is she a dominant tennis player, she's a dominant woman, okay? Woman tennis player that is upending Serena Williams, that is taking the reins right now. That's a lot of pressure. Like, that is a lot of pressure. People forget that these people are humans too. People forget that athletes, and we're reminded constantly. You see the Kevin Loves. You see these people coming out and saying, I struggle with this too. Everyone's got something, right? I got something. You got something. Everyone has something that they struggle with. Everybody. And here's where I'm at. I'm here for taking care of yourself. I think it takes guts to do it, especially if you are Naomi Osaka. This is clearly something that got to the point where she is uneasy about taking questions. Like, she's actually giving up what she loves to play, you know, her sport, to not play because it's that much of a concern. This is a 23-year-old athlete that has entered stardom pretty abruptly. And to me, it's amazing that she stood up and said, you know what? I'm not doing this. It takes courage to do it. Now, here's also where I'm at. The appropriate questions, like, how do you feel after this win? How do you feel after this loss? Those types of questions at times can be annoying and repetitive. I know. I get it. We all sit here as fans. At least I do. I consume it. You saw a couple of reporters ask certain questions during the NHL playoffs that people, the players are like, what? Shut up. Like, they're almost like mosquitoes. But in sports, asking them and answering them in good times and bad is part of being an athlete. I watched some of the press conferences because I wanted to come here ultra prepared. If I felt like there was a reporter asking her unfair questions, or if there's an opportunity where they're saying something out of the blue, trying to trigger something, then you know what? That's on them. They need to be trained. But eventually, this is a part of sports. And Osaka is going to have to work on herself. I'm here for it. But I think that ultimately eliminating the media, it doesn't help the sport. And I don't think that ever is going to change. Now, let me preface again, the appropriate questions. How do you feel after this win? How do you feel after this loss? Talk about it, your opponent. Those are journalistic. Those are fair questions. You're going to have to eventually be comfortable answering them. And maybe you're not comfortable, but you're going to have an obligation to do that. The other stuff, the race stuff, because this is also difficult. Osaka comes from an interracial couple. She is literally the face of Japan. And she's in here, in the United States, 23 years old, and completely changing the sport. So these are not easy things to take in at 23 years old. And we look at the money, and we look at where she lives, and we look at everything, and we're like, oh, come on. What does she complain about? They're human too. Just like you and I. They might not make the same money as us, but they're still human at the end of the day. And that, I just wanted to just address that. I'm here for Naomi Osaka, for taking the time. She comes out. She's vulnerable. It takes guts to do that. But ultimately, the media, it's not going to change. People are going to come out, they're going to ask you questions, and if those are the questions that are asked, how do you feel, what do you think about this opponent, those are going to have to be questions that she's going to have to work with. But the ones out of the blue, the ones out of left field trying to pry you, those should be eliminated. I 100% agree with that. All right, we've got a good guest for you today. We've got Greg Wyshynski, ESPN NHL senior writer. You know, I only have Russo on here when I'm talking hockey. We had Pat Micheletti a couple of weeks ago, Wes Walls back in the summer. Greg, I listened to Greg on YouTube. It's going to be a good spot. We'll talk Wild. We'll talk NHL playoffs. Everything you need to know going forward here in the postseason as we get closer and closer to the Stanley Cup. All right, Greg's up next here on the Strom Sports Show. All right, Greg Wyshynski is with us now, ESPN NHL senior writer. Also does a podcast, Puck Soup. It's great to have you on today, Greg. Steven Strom here. What an interesting last couple of days with just the physicality of hockey. And I know it amps up in the playoffs, and I know that it's all about the hits and all this kind of stuff, but some of the last few hits that I've seen the last few days, and we'll get into the Jets, the Jets debacle, but just you talk about the physicality of hockey. I mean, it does not shy away going into these last couple of days.
It doesn't, and it gets ratcheted up in the postseason. I mean, on the one hand, that's why it's so much fun, is that the intensity becomes so high, and it almost becomes a different brand of hockey than what you see in the regular season. The downside being that, you know, sometimes emotions can get the best of players, and they do dumb things. It's weird. I wrote about this in my column this week about, like, if you're trying to make new hockey fans, if you show them the Olympics, it's completely different than what they would see in the Stanley Cup playoffs. They might not even like it, right? If you show them the Stanley Cup playoffs, well, that's entirely different than what you see in the regular season. And they're going to look at you and say, why do I got to watch 82 games of this when all I want to do is watch four rounds of this? So it's kind of a classic hockey problem in the sense that the playoffs are awesome, but the playoffs are also much more awesome than the regular season. So it's hard to, it's kind of that March Madness problem of being like, why do I got to watch, Canisius play in December when all I care about is what happens in March.
That's a really good point here. And, we'll start with yesterday, and I guess this is coming out tomorrow, so it'll be Wednesday, with Mark Scheifele in the hit on Thursday. Paul Maurice came out here and said he sort of was backing away from it and say, well, I kind of was, he didn't leave his feet. Where do you stand on this hit? It's an absolutely brutal hit. I know it's at the end of the game. I know it's an empty net. I know it's the playoffs. Where do you find yourself on the end of Mark Scheifele and the hit on Jake Evans?
Well, Paul Maurice is lying. Paul Maurice knows what charging is. Paul Maurice knows exactly what his player did in this situation. He's being a good coach. He's trying to draw some heat from Scheifele. It's what coaches do. By every definition of the rule, this was a charge. He came at him in full speed. He wasn't even trying to defend the puck with his stick. He was just trying to take out the guy. And, you could say that Evans was eligible to be hit, but it certainly was a charge with Scheifele coming into the zone with the velocity that he was. And then obviously the injury resulting on the play, or at least Evans being stretchered out. We don't know. We didn't know really know what the extent of the injury was after the game. We got the match penalty for it and rightfully so. And, a suspension for that kind of play isn't an automatic, especially for a guy like Scheifele, who is a pretty clean player. Yeah. But, it's hard to see the social media reaction to something like that and see, hey, don't frame this guy as a villain. He's a good guy. I'm like, yeah, he's totally a good guy. But good guys do bad things sometimes. Yep. And Scheifele, you could see during the game, was getting more and more frustrated with the way things were going, with how the Habs are playing him. And he took out his frustrations on Jake Evans and will serve the time for it.
Greg Wyshynski with us of ESPN. He's an NHL senior writer. Let's do a little wild here. This is the fan base out here in Minnesota. I don't really know, to be honest with you. The first couple of games in this series against Vegas, the first game they win in overtime, you're thinking, all right, this is a different Wild team. They drop the next three. They come back, force a game seven. My first question to you is, how should Wild fans at least look at this season in totality? Because, with the trades and bringing in new guys and Kaprizov coming over, I think they sort of are ahead of schedule in terms of what we sort of thought was going to happen after the sell of all the veteran players on this Wild team from years ago.
No, I think that's accurate. And, I covered the Washington Capitals in the mid 2000s when Ovechkin showed up, and the Wild are in better shape than those Ovechkin Capitals teams were. Those Capitals teams were gutted so they could draft Ovechkin. Right.
Sure.
But it reminded me, when Kaprizov showed up, of that time when Ovechkin showed up, in the sense that one guy comes in and the tone and tenor of the organization changes. And you could feel the excitement kind of filtering through the team when Kaprizov would do his things. You could feel the sudden jolt of optimism, in the sense of, okay, we've got a franchise guy now who can score goals and do amazing things. And we can use that as kind of the focal point for what we do next. And so it's a sea change moment. And so are they ahead of schedule? I mean, it might be a little bit. I mean, I don't know too many people that didn't have them in the top four in the West division, just maybe by virtue of the fact of how terrible the California teams were going to be.
Yeah.
But I think that his arrival gives them focus. Billy Guerin getting another full season is going to give them focus. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do next. I mean, I look at this lineup and I say to myself, I mean, if you're really thinking big and dreaming outside the box, you're thinking to yourself, if Jack Eichel needs a place to play, and he wants a hockey market, and he wants a place with upward trajectory in the standings, Minnesota would be a real nice place. And they might have the assets to get him too, if it ever came to that. But I mean, you talk about holes in this lineup and the constant search of this franchise for that, franchise center. there might be one out there if they want to ante up for him.
Yeah, and we've heard a couple of rumors about that. And the Wild really struggled in the faceoff circle, especially in that Vegas series. You know, as much as Mikko Koivu didn't do a lot offensively point-wise, he was always there to win a big faceoff, and the Wild missed that this year. Talking about the offseason and some of the things that they have to make decisions on, one of these guys, and you grew up here in Jersey, New Jersey Devils, Zach Parise. Where do you find yourself right now with Parise? He was scratched a couple of times this year. He tried to get Marcus Foligno a hat trick, and that sort of is what sent down, I think, most of his playing time, and he just never could get back with Evanson and whatever it may be. We know about the contract. We know also about the Seattle Kraken and the expansion and having to protect players. Where does Zach Parise fall, you think, with the future of the Minnesota Wild?
Well, it's weird because, I mean, he kind of indicated he'd like to stay. Every indication is that he shouldn't. I mean, it's not really a good place for him. He's going to end up getting scratched again a bunch next season if he's still around this team. But ultimately, because of the nature of the contract, he holds the cards in this situation. And that's what he's earned. I mean, that's you know, the reason he signed there is in order to have the contract that he has and the, you know, ability to kibosh trades. So I don't know where it lands. I mean, logically, they've done enough where you'd think he'd want to go. But he didn't really indicate that that was top of mind for him after the season.
Out of these playoffs here, we'll step aside from Minnesota Wild. Out of the teams right now, you've got to say that Colorado has been the most dominant team and looks like they are the best team in hockey, especially after last night. I mean, you thought that Vegas was going to win this game. They come all the way back. They win in overtime. What is Colorado doing that is just so next level right now as far as them winning a bunch of these games?
Well, they're one of these teams that's just locked in, right? Like in every facet of their game. They can roll four lines. They're getting incredible play out of their top line, which, as we saw from the Toronto Maple Leafs, is something you need if you're going to win in the playoffs. And they're getting incredible goaltending now in Philip Grubauer. I thought his performance in game two was one of the best goaltending performances of the postseason so far. So they're just clicking at all and on all cylinders. And if they can stay healthy, which they've been reasonably healthy so far, and don't suffer any kind of catastrophic loss like they did last postseason with Grubauer going out, you know, not only are they the prohibitive favorite, they, I mean, you're starting to wonder who's going to be able to knock them off because they're just a really well put together
juggernaut.
Team. Yep. Yeah, juggernaut is a good word to use. I mean, they can beat you a number of different ways. I mean, they as we saw already in this Vegas series, they can just smash you offensively in one game and then eke out an overtime win in the next game on special teams. They're real good, and I think Vegas, we've been waiting for this matchup all year. This kind of Kong versus Godzilla thing happening with Vegas and Colorado sure. In that division. And it ain't over yet. I think Vegas still has something to say in this series, but Colorado just looks like they've leveled up in a way that no other team in this postseason has.
Greg Wyshynski's with us, ESPN senior writer, NHL. Make sure to check out his columns as well on ESPN. Most interesting, most intriguing series out in the East. You're covering the game tonight. You're in Long Island. What is the most intriguing series for you right now out in the East?
By default, it's probably this Islanders-Boston series. You know, the Lightning are another team that seems like they've leveled up a little bit. Some people were picking Florida in that first round series. I wasn't convinced. I think the thing about Tampa that's so impressive is just they've been there. And, you know, I looked at it in my column this week. I think of their six victories, they have five different people who have scored the game-winning goal.
Wow.
And that's kind of just indicative of the depth on this team. And not only the depth on this team, but also guys that just know how to do it. I mean, if it's not Kucherov, it could be, you know, Palat. If it's not Palat, it could be Point. If it's not Point, it could be Killorn for one night. You know, it's amazing how many guys on this team know how to get that goal when they need it. And then, you know, turn the keys over to the best goalie in the league, in my opinion, in Vasilevskiy. So as Bruins Islander series, by default is the more intriguing one, and also is intriguing just because as I sit and look at this ridiculous erector set of an arena the Islanders are playing in for the rest of this year. I mean, it is the last days of Nassau Coliseum and yep. Islanders players mention, you know, winning at the Collie and trying to keep this thing going as long as you can. And it's hard not to get caught up in sort of the mystique of let's do it one more time for the old barn after what they did to the Penguins in this building in the first round. I think these are two really interestingly matched teams. It's a blue collar series. It could be a very brutal series, I think, as we go forward, but it also has that mystique of like, let's just see how long we can drive this car until the tank's on empty when it comes to this horrific, dumb, asbestos filled arena.
Let's do the NHL moving to ESPN, because I think that's definitely something worth talking about. So the NHL is returning to ESPN. It's on a 7-year rights agreement that will begin in the 2021-2022 season. Let's pretend like ESPN doesn't pay your bills. What does this mean moving forward for the NHL? This has to be a good move for the league.
Well, I mean, I could say lots of it, even though I work there. one obviously that I think we're going to do an amazing job covering it. And I think that, you know, what we're able to do for hockey fans is give them the opportunity to have more hockey in their lives than they've been able to have previously. I mean, a part of this deal, along with having games on ESPN and ABC, and then having a slew of games on ESPN Plus, is having what is essentially the NHL.tv package available to fans on ESPN Plus. So, I mean, you're going to get over 1,000 games a season courtesy of all of the different platforms for ESPN, which I think is awesome. And not only that, but with the bundling and everything, you can get your Baby Yoda and your NHL hockey, which is a pretty cool deal. But as far as like the big picture stuff, I've said for years that the NHL set itself back by getting a monolithic one network rights deal. I mean, you look at the NBA, MLB, NFL, it is multiple networks covering these sports. And it's just simple math. Like, you're trying to grow your fan base. You grow your fan base by introducing your product through other properties that are already on networks. So like, if you're watching, you know, Fox's Sunday Night Lineup, you're going to see advertisements for, you know, the NFL and things like that all the time. So the idea that now that it's on Turner and now it's on ESPN, there are just going to be so many different entry points to the sport, not only in the stuff that are on those networks, like obviously our other sports properties, you know, AEW wrestling on TNT, stuff like that. But also, and just who's going to be talking about it. I mean, already we've seen Stephen A. Smith opine on hockey more in the last month than he has probably in the last couple of years. And that's fun. I mean, not to people that don't like fun things, but it's fun for those of us that are like, hey, maybe this will get somebody caring about hockey. So it's a really exciting time. And I have the utmost confidence that we're going to do a real good job in covering it.
All right, elephant in the room. Let's get your predictions here. We have a feel for what you're having out in the West. Give me your prediction for the Stanley Cup and who wins.
Well, my prediction for the Stanley Cup was the Leafs, which, you know, what the hell. So, like, I mean, don't trust any of this crap because I got fooled again. I'll tell you this. Montreal is in an intriguing spot, if only because they seem to be playing with a lot of confidence in front of a hot goalie, and now they're going to be playing against a diminished team in this round. They'd have to get through Colorado to make noise, which is probably not going to happen. But they're on a really interesting run now that they've gotten through Toronto. I think at the end of the day, you got to go with the chalk of the Tampa Colorado final.
Okay.
In which case, it's going to be real intriguing to see. Like,
it's a hell
you've
of
got
a series.
This veteran team. It's a hell of a series because, I mean, if you're looking for someone who's going to figure out a way to stop Colorado, it's probably Tampa with their depth and with the individuals on that team that really know how to play shutdown hockey when necessary. I think I still give Colorado the advantage just because I'm just so locked in right now, but that'd be an amazing final. And I hope that's the final. Although, again, like we talked about, it's our rights deal starts next year. So if we got to go through this nonsense of watching a Canadian team win the cup, it might as well be this year.
Might as well get it over with. Hey, Greg, I really appreciate you jumping on with me today. Enjoy the game. Where can we find and how many times a week is a podcast coming out? Just plug your stuff really quickly. We know you at ESPN, but if there's anything else that you would like to add, please.
Well,
the floor is yours.
I'll say, but my column on ESPN Plus runs every Thursday, so you can check that out. As far as Puck Soup goes, it comes out every week on Wednesday. You could also, we have a Patreon that has a ton of bonus stuff, 2 extra episodes a month, a weekly mailbag. And then also the other podcast that I host, which is Mise en Pod, which is a podcast about food television that focuses on Top Chef right now.
Yeah.
So it's just all
look at you, versatile. How about that? Not just a sports guy.
Everybody needs an outlet. So, you know, my stuff's all available all over. And obviously you can also check me out on TV each week on Daily Wager on ESPN2, where I give out the hockey info and hockey picks.
Vegas over 2.5 goals. I saw that. I saw that yesterday.
Under 2.5 goals.
Oh,
I nailed
it. I'm sorry. Under.
The best bet I made this week was Vasilevskiy in game 2 against Carolina, over 30.5 saves. And they got a shot on him in like the last 1.8 seconds of the game. Oh. So that's the margins we're dealing with here.
Oh man, you got the low lows, you got the high highs. That is gambling. That is gambling.
Good job for myself.
But hey, Greg, I really appreciate it again. Make sure to check out everything that he just said. Again, I appreciate you giving me time and enjoy the series, man. Thanks again.
Anytime. Thanks.
And that's Greg Wyshynski, everyone. Thank you for listening today on the Strom Sports Show. Make sure to check out TalkNorth.com. Big shout out to my producer, Brandon Morton. Big shout out to you, the listeners. Have a fantastic rest of your weekend. For Steven Strom, we'll talk to you next Friday here on TalkNorth.com.